Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, November 20th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Some civil servants may not get their bonuses this month as expected, a move that has annoyed workers' unions with the government claiming its coffers are empty.
That consultation process was completed and the minister confirmed that bonuses will be paid to the civil servants, but it will be staggered.
The South African government says Zimbabweans who have applied to renew their permits will be allowed to go home for the festive holidays and return to South Africa without any hindrances.
The announcement by Honorable Kigawa is a welcome relief to most Zimbabweans who are here in South Africa.
And community leaders in Matabeleland South are urging the government to intensify irrigation programs in the drought-prone region after the United Nations Population Fund this week said children in the region are hardest hit by kwashoka due to starvation.
The government says its coffers are empty and so much such that some of its employees will not get their 13th check this month, as expected, much to the annoyance of some leaders of the workers' representatives. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
Speaking to Studio 7 after meeting leaders of workers' representative bodies in the capital today, Public Service and Labour Minister Nicholas Goche said the government will not be able to pay bonuses to all its workers as expected because its coffers are empty. Goche said this decision was reached following consultations with the Finance Ministry.
I had not replied to their question about bonuses because I needed first to consult with the Minister of Finance so that he could tell me what was possible. That consultation process was completed and the minister confirmed that bonuses will be paid to the civil servants, but it will be staggered. Some will receive it in November and others in December.
But Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe General Secretary Raymond Majongwe said government workers should be treated equally.
It's for all the civil servants. This is why we've actually made a proposal that the lowest paid worker should be earning $680. We have done a sum total analysis of what rentals, of what water bills we are paying, of what health expenses we are having, of what we ordinarily want our salaries to be pegged at, and we have put $608 as our minimum acceptable working figure for 2015.
President of the Progressive Educators Union of Zimbabwe, Wilson Makanyaire, said government should walk its talk on its promises for its employees' bonuses.
They discussed about housing, we discussed about the land issue, we discussed about the 13th check for civil service, we discussed about amendment of the labor laws. Yes, the meeting was good in a nutshell.
Meanwhile, Minister Goche said negotiations between government and its employees for salary adjustments are expected to resume next month.
The first process I will do is to consult the Minister of Finance so that he can give us the guidelines as to how far we can go. So that consultation process has not been completed.
However, Majongwe warned that civil servants may down their tools if the negotiations do not yield the desired results.
And one doesn't want to be oblivious of the realities around what the doctors did. The doctors were raising their concerns. They were not listened to. They went on strike. And if government wants to solve and deal with our problems, they can avoid the strike by engaging us. Because if things are not addressed, 2015 will be a very difficult year, we want to assure you.
Civil servants say they want their salaries increased so that the least paid worker earns at least $680 per month. But a recent survey conducted by the Consumer Council of Zimbabwe concluded that a family of five requires at least $592 per month to survive. Currently, the least paid government employee earns $250. Mr. Goche, however, did not speak to the allegations being leveled against him by colleagues in ZANU-PF in the faction allegedly led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, that he visited Europe and passed through Russia and South Africa seeking to hire hitmen to kill President Robert Mugabe if he refused to leave office at the party's elective December Congress. Goche, according to the state-controlled media, is in the faction allegedly supporting the beleaguered Vice President Joyce Mujuru. The former state security minister told the Herald newspaper yesterday that he had never been to Israel and that he does not know anything about the said plan. He is likely going to be damned like many others in his camp, allegedly linked to Mrs. Mujuru. The party's supreme decision-making body, the Politburo, missed this Saturday to discuss this and other issues as the Congress debates draw closer. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The South African government says Zimbabweans who have applied to renew their permits will be allowed to go home for the festive holidays and to return to South Africa without any hindrances. The announcement was made by Home Affairs Chief Malusi Gigaba in Cape Town today, allaying fears from thousands of Zimbabwean permit applicants who were worried they may be prevented from returning to South Africa if they visited Zimbabwe before being approved. Gigaba revealed that 64% of the 249,000 Zimbabweans officially working in that country under the dispensation program have since applied for a permit renewal since October. The application process ends December 31st. Reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached Zimbabwe Migrants Association spokesman Daniel Muzenda, who says they are happy with the South African decision.
The announcement by Honorable Kigawa is a welcome relief to most Zimbabweans who are here in South Africa, as they were clarity as to what they are going to do since we are approaching the festive season. And most people would want to visit their family, as most of their family members are in Zimbabwe. So it is really it was really a cause for concern, and we welcome the announcement by the minister that people can now go home for Christmas and come back and wait for their permit, possibly in January, February next year here in South Africa.
And what do you make of the percentage that has so far applied for new permits?
Yesterday, about 54% of the Zimbabweans who are eligible for applying for ZSP has done so as of yesterday. And we are still hopeful that the 46% which is remaining can still make it before the closing date of the 31st December 2014.
How about the many problems that were encountered by applicants in the beginning? Are they still there?
The challenges which were encountered by most applicants during the first phase of the ZSP application process. In fact, there are challenges here and there, but they are now minimal as compared to the month of October when people started to apply for the permit. Those who had problems in using the computers were helped by different organizations which are here in South Africa, which deal with Zimbabwean issues here in South Africa.
Daniel Muzenda is the spokesman for the Zimbabwe Migrants Association. He was speaking on the line with Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo from South Africa.
Community leaders in Matabeleland South have urged the government to intensify irrigation programs in the drought-prone region after the United Nations Population Fund, or UNICEF, this week said children in the region are hardest hit by kwashioka due to starvation. The government says although food insecurity is prevalent throughout the country, the most affected areas are under Region 4 and 5, which include Matabeleland South, Matabeleland North, and Manicaland. Matabeleland South Senator Sithembile Mdlotshwa tells Standekile Mhlanga the situation is dire in a region because most families, including breastfeeding mothers, survive on one meal per day.
It is a known factor that Region 5, our region, receives a different rain pattern than other regions. the policymakers shouldn't rely on the harvest or thinking that maybe this year there might be more rain. More dams should be constructed in this region so that we harvest that water if we have. So at least people rely more on irrigation. And people, if we have more dams, we have a food security funding. The government programs usually are partisan. They are distributed on party lines every time, be it once or not. So then we rely more on non-governmental organizations. But I should think their activities this year, because of the rain that we received, were not as more extreme in the ground like the other years.
There have been similar reports about Matabeleland South in the past years. What do you think is the long-term solution?
We could sort out this issue of cattle ranching and the food security ranching. We have to have water. We have to have food. If you want to have food security, you have to have water.
That was Matabeleland South Senator Sithembile Mlotshwa on the line from Matopo with Sithandekile Mhlanga.
Zimbabwe today launched its revised national guidelines for HIV testing and counseling with special emphasis on couples, children and adolescents as it steps up efforts to halt the spread of the virus that causes AIDS. Ivan Chifera has more details.
Speaking at the launch of the new guidelines, the Health Ministry's AIDS and Tuberculosis Director, Dr. Owen Mugurungi, said HIV testing and counseling remain the cornerstone in the fight against AIDS. He said the new guidelines will assist service providers in expanding children and adolescent access to quality testing and counseling.
We now have, within these guidelines, certain aspects that deal with HIV testing and counseling for young people, adolescents and children, which previously did not exist in the previous guidelines. So the previous guidelines had a gap, which we now address with the new guidelines.
He said while previously testing and counseling was mainly targeting the sick or those donating blood, his ministry now wants families, partners and adolescents to get tested and know their status so that they can be linked to care, treatment and support.
We are encouraging and urging people to go out there and get tested as a family, as couples, as people with partners, basically because we know that when you go with your partner, or you go as a couple or with your family, no one is left behind. Previously, people used to go alone, and when they went alone, the other partner or the other members of the family then delayed in accessing care or delayed in getting the HIV service.
Mugurungi said the government is putting emphasis on the testing of children as statistics show that many of the estimated 190,000 children living with HIV in the country and aged between 0 and 14 years did not know their status in 2013. Their parents and caregivers did not know the children's status, preventing them from getting the necessary treatment, care and support services needed to stay healthy. Under the guidelines, a child aged 16 years is considered to be able to give full consent for HIV testing and counseling. If a parent and caregiver cannot give consent for a child below 16 years of age, yet the health workers believe the testing to be in the best interest of the child, health workers would be allowed to exercise the best interest of the child and seek approval from the person in charge of a clinic or hospital to do the testing and counseling. Emmanuel Gasa of the AIDS and AIDS Foundation tells Studio 7 it is encouraging that the new guidelines target previously left out groups such as children and adolescents.
This is now more sector-specific, whereby we now have guidelines that focus more on children. We now have guidelines that focus more on young people, particularly adolescents, whereby even as adults, we are now able to more like categorize properly for these meaningful guidelines for HIV testing and counseling.
Government is targeting that 85% of the population, including children and adolescents, must know their HIV status by 2015. Almost every Zimbabwean has heard about HIV, knows where to get tested, but only 50% of the population know their HIV status. An estimated 1.4 million people are living with HIV and AIDS in Zimbabwe, with about 1 million in urgent need of antiretroviral therapy. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Now we take a look at regional and international news.
A chaos erupted at Nigeria's National Assembly today as security forces tried to block the Speaker of the House of Representatives from entering the complex. Police tell VOA they fired tear gas during a clash between the security forces and an estimated 200 supporters of House Speaker Aminu Tambuwal.
U.S. President Barack Obama will tonight discuss his plans to protect undocumented immigrants in the United States from deportation during a nationally televised address. News outlets say an executive order by Mr. Obama will allow as many as 5 million undocumented immigrants to obtain work permits, including those with children born in the country and spouses of U.S. citizens. The president is also expected to expand an executive order he signed in 2012 that protects young immigrants who came to the United States as children, known as Dreamers, from deportation by lifting the age restrictions on people who qualify.
And health authorities in Mali say they are monitoring 338 people linked with the country's 6 fatal Ebola cases, with most of them under daily surveillance. In a news release, the World Health Organization said today that all 118 people who had direct contact with the Ebola victims have completed their 21-day incubation period without developing symptoms.
The ZANU-PF Politburo, which is expected to meet on Saturday, is expected to make proposals for constitutional changes that will empower President Robert Mugabe to appoint 3 members of the presidium, who include the 2 vice presidents and party chairmen. According to ZANU-PF activists, almost all members of the party supporting a faction allegedly led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa have agreed to make these constitutional changes in order to fortify their grip on the party after nearly dumping the rival faction said to be led by beleaguered Vice President Joyce Mujuru. They say the Politburo will endorse the proposals that have been mooted by new provincial chairmen being catapulted to power through sidelining anyone said to be supporting Mrs. Mjuru, who is accused of being allegedly corrupt, incompetent, and attempting to topple the president. One of the deposed chairmen, Jason Machaya, told Jonga Kandemiri that he has accepted the party's decision to remove him from office.
I've already said they accepted whatever interpretation to go. They are entitled to do that, but I do concur with the decision and I will abide by that decision.
Looking at what is happening in your party at the moment, what do you have to say about this?
I'm not the spokesman of the party. I'm just a member of the party. And I just responded to your question because it was directed to me as an individual. If you want to know more about the party, then there are people with that authority given in the constitution to answer your concerns.
Meanwhile, First Lady Grace Mugabe has been leading the onslaught on the vice president and those allegedly associated with her, with indications that the president will appoint people of his choice at the forthcoming December Congress to take the vice presidency post. Some names being tossed around for nomination to the presidium include Mnangagwa, Matabeleland and political heavyweights Eunice Sandy, and former diplomats Pelekezela Mpoko and Simon Kayamoyo, Women's League Secretary Opam Chinguri, and President of the Senate Edna Madzongwe. Mrs. Mujuru has already filed her papers in a move to participate in the elections at the party's Congress to retain her post regardless of the onslaught against her. But political analyst Ibo Mandaza of the Southern African Political and Economic Series, or SAPES, tells Studio 7 Skips Dube that Mr. Mugabe may leave the two posts of vice president vacant to avoid directly appointing a successor.
I suspect that the constitution will be changed next week to ensure that the president appoints the presidium. Secondly, that it's unlikely, in my view, to appoint anybody substantive as vice president, because to do so would be to anoint a successor. He might leave the post of vice president in the party vacant, and those won't be the first vacancies anyway. There are many vacancies, I think about 7 or 8 vacancies in the Politburo in the moment, in the Central Committee. He'll probably leave Joyce as merely a member of the Central Committee and Politburo, and there is no way he's going to throw her aside, because he knows that she commands a lot of support across the country. She won't risk doing what he did with Edgar Tekere, who became a thorn in the flesh outside the party. You'll want to keep people like Joyce and Emerson close to him, but in an impotent position. You have a hodgepodge of non-entities, spent forces dominating the Politburo Central Committee. You won't allow another situation where a vice president is breathing over his neck, directly or indirectly. And the biggest dilemma he has, if he nominates anybody as vice president, that person is ipso facto his successor.
And where do we place Mrs. Mugabe here? Where is she going?
She's a sideshow. Initially, as part of the whirlwind to destabilize Joyce and have her removed, but ultimately I don't think she has any ambitions for the top post.
And that was political analyst Ibo Mandaza of the Southern African Political and Economic Series, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Political commentator and ZANU-PF activist Maurice Ngwenya disagrees, saying Mr. Mugabe will not leave the two posts vacant.
According to the constitution of the party, the norm is the provincial chairpersons are the ones who elect those leaders. They've since realized that there seem to be an anomaly, because there was also a very integral part of the ZANU-PF constitution, which is the unit accord, whereby the unit accord clearly stated that the president is to nominate the two vice presidents as well as the chairperson of the party. Therefore, this is why there are discussions going on right now, to make sure that these anomalies are perhaps ironed out as we go to Congress. Maybe there will be an amendment, of which that amendment can take place in the absence of Congress. The Central Committee, as well as the Politburo, is mandated enough to make amendments to the Constitution.
It appears as if there is a suggestion that maybe the President may not appoint anyone to the post of Vice President. What's your take on that?
I think the most logical thing would be there would be a election, not leaving the those posts vacant, because it is not only important to the party, but also it is important to the country.
For further perspective on the ZANU-PF division's report, Tatenda Gumbo spoke to independent political analyst Blessing Vava and political analyst and lecturer at Huddersfield University in the United Kingdom, Nkululeko Sibanda. Sibanda says the alleged Mujuru faction has failed to navigate the political arena.
Politics is about the center of power. The Mujuru faction concentrated on courting the powerless members of the districts and provinces and so forth, which is not where power lies. That is where power is legitimized. The first thing you have to do is look for where power lies and try to bring that on board, and thereafter going on to purge and to align the provinces in such a way that when they then go to the provinces, their power will be legitimized. But power is not acquired there. It is acquired where it currently resides. And power in ZANU-PF currently resides with Mugabe.
Mr. Vava, what's your take on this issue?
Well, I think I want to concur with what my colleague has said, because one thing that the Mujuru faction has failed to understand, that is that the party that they belong to, ZANU-PF, one, it is not a democratic party. And secondly, it is a party of one person. It is President Mugabe who makes the decision. And whenever there is any person who try to argue with him, who try to throw to differ with President Mugabe. We've seen the consequences of doing that with a lot of examples. President Mugabe, in my view, is not ready for any successor at the present moment. He's ready to rule forever, and it has been shown by the purging of all these chairpersons, and also by the endorsement that President Mugabe is uncontested in Congress and is the sole candidate for ZANU-PF in the 2018 election.
Mr. Sibanda, that question goes to you. I'll ask you that. What Mr. Vava is bringing up, the issue of a legitimate successor.
The sudden move into mainstream politics by Grace Mugabe tells you that there is a consciousness within Mugabe's mind that he may not be strong enough and available to tackle political issues, and therefore is wanting to bring in a new host. And the fact that the Mnangagwa faction decided to court her and not necessarily the president directly shows you that there is a thought about what would happen after Mugabe is gone. I think Mugabe is thinking about what happened to his children and to his wife after he's long gone, because they're still fairly young. They have a lot of years ahead of them, and they will need protection. So I think that although they are not addressing the question directly now, they are indirectly thinking about it, and their strategic positioning by both Grace Mugabe and the Mnangagwa faction in terms of what they would do in the event that they needed somebody to succeed the president, and what they've systematically done and cleverly done is take Mujuru out of that matrix.
Mr. Vava, what's next for Vice President Mujuru following what is going on within the party?
I think she does not have many choices because one thing that probably she understands, or she might fail to understand, is that ZANU-PF is not a democratic party, like I said earlier. So whatever is going to be decided, whatever fate that is going to meet, I think she should just accept what the party has given me. Failure to do that, or trying to go against what the president would have said, I can see disastrous consequences awaiting all these cases of corruption, which are now starting to build up, might be another way of trying to silence her.
And I'll end with you, Mr. Sibanda. What's next for Vice President Mujuru?
In addition to what Vava said, which is that she just has to cook up and try to mend bridges with President Mugabe and the Mnangagwa faction, which seems very impossible given the extent to which the First Lady Grace Mugabe has taken the fight to. I think she's taken to a point where you could say there is no return here. The only possibility for her here is to talk to other members of the Mnangagwa faction and seek some level of accommodation, if for anything at all, but to ensure that the party remains united and is able to claim some level of legitimacy after the 2018 election.
That was independent political analyst Blessing Vava. You also heard the views of another political analyst and lecturer at Huddersfield University in the UK, Nkululeko Sibanda.
Chris, as a reminder to our listeners to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. For the Women's Forum with Placidus Jeremiah and Marvelous Mtlanganyawie.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
Unfortunately, time is not on our side today, Chris. What were the main stories? Some civil servants may not get their bonuses this month as expected, a move that has annoyed workers' union representatives, with the government claiming its coffers are empty.
And the South African government says Zimbabweans who have applied to renew their permits will be allowed to go home for the festive holidays and return to South Africa without any hindrances.
And community leaders in Matabeleland South are urging the government to intensify irrigation programs in the drought-prone region after the United Nations Population Fund, or UNICEF, this week said children in the region are hardest hit by kwashioka due to starvation.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Join us at 7 every evening for news in 3 languages, and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com for more on our top stories. You can send us an email to studio7@voanews.com or text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.